Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 194. Tonight's show is brought to you by Brain Full of Bottom Bracket Standards.
I just want to mention that when Matt counted down the recording, he was counting like they do on the YouTube channel Ballistic High Speed.
It wasn't on purpose.
I know it wasn't on purpose, but you did it.
And I'll also say the show is brought to you by a second thing. And that thing is, show me where on the doll the Maven brake touched you.
All right, then.
I like that. All right. You're going to kick it off with the normal stuff?
I don't really have much to talk about. I have failed at riding anything with two wheels.
How about since, I don't know, I don't have, maybe Kenny has stuff to talk about, and I'm speaking ahead of where I should, but why don't we say our favorite bikes instead of what we've done in the last week, because my week hasn't been all that interesting. Matt's hasn't. I don't know about Kenny.
Well, let's just knock out the week stuff, because like, I feel really, really awkward not doing that first.
Okay, so for me, I am working, and then today I put my Subaru in the air, not off a jump, don't get excited, and I pulled the shocks and struts out, whatever they're called, who cares.
Is this the kind of shared Subaru situation that has been with you guys for a while? Or is this a different Subaru?
It was Andrea's, and I properly purchased it when she got her truck.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
So she owned the Subaru. Now I own the Subaru. We both drive the Subaru.
Matt drives it more than I do because he commutes to Salida 4 days a week.
So put that bad Larry in the air. And since I don't have any flat ground here, there was definitely some rigging involved to anchor it to a tree. And then I put it on four jack stands and I changed the rear suspension and rear brakes first. So shock strut, spring, whatever assembly came out, new one went in, new rotor went on, new pads went in. Did that four times for all four corners, bled the brakes, and went out and drove it. And it stops great and it needs an alignment now. So it's totally normal. I mean, I didn't expect it to drive perfect, but I marked all my alignment bolts, and before anybody's like, well, if you'd used a paint pen and this and that, no, the thing the bolt goes into went in the trash, and a new one went in, so followed some tips from YouTube that were like, do this, this will be your best chance of getting it back where it belongs, which is good enough to drive it to an alignment, and I was like, boy, howdy, I heard what I needed to, so that all went actually 100% smooth. My only two hiccups were I had one bolt that didn't want to go back in, and luckily I could access it from the other side, so I ran the bolt in from the other side, then in from the side it should. That was fine. And then later I had my bleed nipple covers in a little tray, and then I stepped on that tray and yeeted them across the driveway, but I found all four of them. So That's really what I've had going on, and I'm going to go for a ride tomorrow, but that'll be the next show. So, Kenny, go. Whoever's next, fucking go.
I guess I'll go real quick. I have, a couple things to talk about, but I know we got a lot of other show stuff, so I'll try to be as quick as I can. I rode Moto, no surprise. Took the Ultra out again. It's really needing a primary belt. I've been putting it off. I have it physically in my possession, but I haven't installed it because I got to rip all the swing arm and suspension and all that stuff off. So I feel like I'm on a ticking time bomb with that thing blowing up, and I don't want to be in the middle of a mountain somewhere when it breaks. But I have no indication to say that it's going to break, but most people say you get 1,000 to 2,000 miles out of them, and I have 2,000 miles on mine. So with that said, I explored a slightly new area. It was pretty cool. Kind of did some Google Map stalking and found some cool spots, and I had no idea how steep they were, but they were pretty reasonable, very rocky, just like nasty narrow Jeep road type stuff, but just relentless rocks for probably 8 miles. Actually a little bit less than that. I think the full climb was 5 miles. It was 3,000 feet in 5 miles, so good and steep, but nothing that a moto can't handle. And I had some cool views and found a whole little like spot of just a spider web of trails that I didn't really see a lot of people on. And yeah, cool. Definitely not like single track, so maybe not as cool for the moto, but still super fun. And yeah, just the places you can get to on a moto are pretty phenomenal. So still enjoying it. The Ultra B is amazing. Just a little tidbit is that bike has been incredibly reliable. I have beaten the snot out of it. It's been yeeted off mountains, and that thing hasn't missed a beat. I've put tires on it. I lube the chain, and literally that's it. And it makes more power than it's supposed to stock. So I'm asking more of it than it should do. And it's just been phenomenal. So yeah, we got to look out. The Chinese are going to kick our ass. That's all I got to say. So that's Moto. And then just in general in life in the shop, it's just been busy and like feel a little bit beat down, to be honest. There's just so much stuff going on and customers with just ridiculous expectations and just manufacturers doing dumb stuff. Nobody knows what to do with tariffs. You got sales that go on that we have no opportunity to buy into, but we're expected as a retailer to just take 20% off for the fuck of it on a product that we sell fine anyway. And then all of a sudden it's on sale for no reason. And we have a bunch of them in stock that we bought at normal wholesale and we run through a normal amount of them. Like, why is that damn thing on sale? And I have no say in it really. And if I don't put it on sale, I'm the asshole that doesn't participate in the sale. Customers don't understand any of this stuff. So fuck companies that do that. Yeah. And just little tired, little beat down in the industry right now. It's just not a super awesome, fun time. I think that's all I got.
All right.
Oh, real quick. Not going to go into it super deep, but been having issues with Maven brakes. Lots of them. They're super picky on bleeding. They're obviously touchy just in power. We all knew that anyway. And a lot of times they leak between the two pieces of the caliper. Not just grease, which is ridiculous, but they sometimes just leak all their fluid out and then your brakes don't work anymore. So don't buy first generation SRAM anything brakes. That's my recommendation to you. Hopefully we'll get some resolutions to it, but it's pretty frustrating, especially when it pisses off customers and they want to return bikes over it. And then I'm supposed to fix the problem. And yeah, it's frustrating. What else can I say about it?
It's suboptimal.
It's suboptimal. And I wish SRAM would own this stuff a little bit better. If you Google around, there's obviously a lot of people that talk about the whole like grease situation in between the clamshells. Why they let that happen and didn't figure that out, I have no idea. I mean, it's clearly a quality control issue. I mean, you notice it pretty much immediately. Again, I'm not wrenching on bikes every day, so you got to understand that. I get brought in when shit hits the fan. So that's what I've been experiencing. And then when you have multiple brakes, well, all of them, that do it. Apparently they fixed it in some generation of the brake and didn't really tell anybody, but they need to have freaking service announcements and just tell at least internal people and dealers like, hey, we screwed up. This is what's going on. This is the fix. If you Google around, you can find some random ass like unlabeled page on the website that says like, it's okay if your Maven brakes spew a bunch of grease everywhere, wipe it off a few times. Don't call us is basically what it says. And that's just unacceptable in my opinion. Like you fucked up, own it. Have a proper solution. And yeah, really just don't do that stuff to begin with. Like vet your stuff out better. You know that your brakes always suck and you always have problems with them. So like you just can't, it cannot keep happening. I don't know what else to say. So I'm going to stop there.
All right. Well, my week has just been planting plants, watering plants, and that's about it, really. Matt, I haven't done anything else interesting. Matt remembers better than I do.
Not that I can remember.
All right. Well, I think that we should do our favorite bikes.
Yeah, I think that'll be good. That'll be a more fun thing to do.
And well, since I'm talking, I'll go first.
No, let's just run through.
Nope. That we're going to do this now because I said so. I'm the oldest. I'm the boss.
Let's do it.
So my most memorable bike, there was.
Wait, can I guess?
Sure.
The Gen 1 Air 9 Carbon.
Nope.
Gen 2.
Nope. So the Gen 2. Well, so it's BH adjacent. So I had a BH road bike. And I also was in touch with some people in Tennessee who were making custom titanium frames. And I said, I want this bike, but I want it. I want to make this into something that is for racing crits. Because I raced a lot of crits in Tennessee. And back when I road raced a lot, and I was like, I want to think about turning and have the bike turn. Like, just steer it with your body. And if you, like, really put a lot into the handlebars, you're just going to, like, turn 90 degrees and flip over.
By the way, I rode that bike and it tried to kill me.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if you.
Yeah, that bike was scary twitchy.
Yeah. And it was like you rest your hands on the handlebars and you steered the bike with your body. Like you didn't use the bars to turn. And it was fucking awesome. And I have to say, like, my most memorable moment on that bike, and I was thinking about this. We were watching some random YouTube videos, and we were watching one with Devin Larratt, the arm wrestler.
Yeah.
Who is, he's like a super, in his videos, like in, you know.
Why are you
home,
watching Devin Larratt videos?
We were watching like Magnus Mitbo, who's a climber who does YouTube.
Yep,
and
yep,
he
also
was,
know him.
Yeah, like he was like at Devin Larratt's house.
Okay, I think it's awesome. I haven't watched his stuff in years, but I really like that guy. I like his channel. I like all the adjacent, you know, arm wrestler, bodybuilder people who have like a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so Devin Larratt, like, super nice.
That dude is
and
awesome.
Kind of like, he's kind of quiet, like, at home and, like, person to person. But arm wrestling stuff, he will mind fuck everyone. Like, absolutely shit talk, mind fuck people until they just are ready to lose. And so when I was riding, when I had this bike, I was doing this crit in Nashville. And I was absolutely just outnumbered. I usually race solo, but there were teams of women there and lots of really good, like they were good enough that if they raced right, they could just beat the ever living shit out of me. But they didn't race right. I did like a counterattack on a preem or something and got away with like two, maybe three. I don't remember how many other people got in this little group with me, and we got off the front and we were pretty well off the front, and the teams of the women who were with me were like really shutting down the chase, and so we were getting away, and that was their first mistake, was they should have chased us down, because if you know that there's someone very fast by themselves in your group and you're like, I don't think our other riders can beat this person, you make the breakaway die. But they didn't do that, and there was some kind of a preem for like a big, like a local bike shop gift card or something, and it was something substantial, like $50, $100, something like that. And everyone's kind of looking at each other, getting twitchy. I was like, "I'm not going to sprint for this because I don't live here." I was like, "But if any of you keep going after this preem and you don't sit up, I will counterattack the ever living shit out of you." And they did exactly what I told them to do. And at the time, I was fucking tired, and that was total bullshit. Like, there was no way I could have done that, because they were really kind of, like, making me work in this breakaway, like, more than, you know, what I wanted to. Like, I didn't have the, like, legs to do what I told them I was going to do, but I just totally, like, Devin Larratted them. I was like, I shit-talked so hard to them that they were, like, they just did exactly what I told them to do. And then I ended up winning the race because that bike was awesome. And I was able to take like this awful line, like around the final turn. Like I turned through a fucking sewer grate and got like a good jump on everyone and won the race. So that was my most memorable bike and most memorable moment on that bike.
All right, Kenny, you should go.
Yeah.
So wait, can I try to guess yours?
You can guess mine. Yeah.
The KHS.
Hang on.
No, I was going to go with the Alloy Jet 9.
Yeah, yeah. That.
You there? Sorry.
Yeah, we're here.
I hit a back button on my mouse by accident, and that's not what you want in Google Meeting.
Nope. So,
I'm going to guess my bike.
All right, I'm going to guess Alloy Jet 9.
Correct, I think. Which one?
The first one you had.
Yeah.
The one that you, the like 2012 bike.
Yeah. I think that is my favorite bike, more from a memory standpoint, but also from a performance standpoint. It's a little bit of everything, right? I probably don't ever want to go back and ride my old bikes, to be honest. I don't think that's a great idea at this point. But the reason it was a good bike is because it was one of the first fairly nice builds that I did from the ground up. It was definitely not no holds barred. I think at the time, Andrea, you might remember, I think maybe I could, the carbon had just come out maybe, but it was either hard to get or it was expensive or something like that. Or maybe it was whispers of it were out there, but it hadn't come out yet.
I don't remember.
I kind of remember, and I might be just making this up, but I kind of remember that like you were just like, fuck it, I'm buying this because I know it's going to do what I want.
Yeah, I think it was more vetted out. There was more known about that bike than the carbon. The carbon was like so new, and it was also pretty expensive. And again, maybe it wasn't out yet.
It was in the era, too, where like carbon bikes broke more often.
I think they really did. And that one, as history would show, was the reason why we were scared of them is because maybe the first generation was like actually fine. And then like the a little bit later on production was first super one. Bad. It was the first one. I don't know.
I pulled the seat tube apart during the Transylvania epic.
Yeah, so. they all broke that seat tube thing.
Well, Kenny told me a story years ago that you had sold 8 or 12 and processed 40 warranties.
Oh, yeah. It was bananas. It was more. The number was more than double what we sold. I don't think it was like triple. But we sold between, I don't know, I think Matt was about right, 8 to 12 or something. And we did 20 or 30 warranties. It was insane. So I'm very glad I didn't buy that bike. But anyway, back to the original story here. It was the 80 millimeter rear travel. And it actually came with an 80 fork, which I ran. I say it came with it. They wanted you to spec an 80 fork on it because I built it from the frame up. Yeah, that bike was cool. It was pretty light. The suspension design was great. It was the CVA bike. And it was just kind of my first really nice cross-country full suspension race bike. And there weren't a whole lot of like great race full suspension bikes in 29er back then, surprisingly enough. There were a few, but definitely not a lot.
You had like the Superfly.
Yeah, it was the Superfly, which also they all broke.
Maybe Scott made one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they were like pretty rare to find one that had a nice, efficient suspension design. And that's what I really loved about it because I came from hardtails. Well, I take that back. I had another full suspension, but it was kind of an old used trail bike. But anyway, that bike was light and it was spec'd out pretty nice. Just a great bike. And I think also the reason that one was memorable is because that was when I was like really ramping up in capability. Like I was riding a lot. I was racing a lot. I was like actually feeling pretty darn good on the bike and being competitive, you know, as competitive as Memphis mountain bike racing can be. But yeah, just had a really good time. You know, we were going out of town all the time and like going to new races and new locations. And just that whole time was just fun. So that's why that bike's memorable. And it was really good to me. I put a ridiculous amount of miles on it and had very few issues. But finally, one of the suspension pivots on the back developed more play than was normal. But the way they designed it is the bearings were not pressed into a linkage. The bearings were pressed into the frame directly. They had to give me a new frame and they did warranty it. And I got the heavier, longer travel aluminum version of it that I never really loved, to be honest. I did some single speed stuff on it, if people remember way back in the day. And it was an okay bike, but definitely never really liked it. It was a press fit bottom bracket, which was stupid. It was heavier, which was stupid. There was something else about that bike that was like not that great. Also, it was painted. And my previous bike was black Anno.
It
was amazing. Yeah. That black Anno stuff was so awesome. And it just made the bike lighter. And it was also more robust. Like it just, you didn't have like paint chipping and cracking and flaking off and all that. But anyway, that bike was phenomenal. I think that's probably my favorite. I've got a whole lot of other really good memories on other bikes. But I guess the rule of the game is we have to pick one. So that's the one I'd pick. Matt?
You already know. It was the Crave.
Which one? You had like some Carves and Craves?
It was the Carve. So I had the original Carve SL, not a Crave. It was a Carve.
Didn't they change it because of the Carver bikes or something?
No, they got sued by the ski industry and they had to change their name because someone has a ski called a Carve. And everyone loses their mind when Senyard sues someone and everyone just acts like nothing happened when Senyard got sued. Like, that shit cuts both ways. So I had a Carve SL, black, rigid. And yeah, just like Kenny, that was the bike that I really like came into my own on. I raced Silamo in 2008 on a hardtail. I did it in 2009 on a full suspension. So first bike was a felt hardtail. Second bike I raced it on. I raced it on a Titus first, Titus Racer X29. And then a felt hardtail with gears. And then I think I raced a 9er and 11 or 8, 9, 10. It doesn't. And then I rode the Crave. I rode the Crave in 12 and 13, I'm pretty sure. And then that was the year that I was like, one of the years on the Crave, rigid single speed, I was 12th overall. And that was like highlight of my mountain bike days for sure. And then I rode that bike, you know, through 2018. And then I got another one. And it just, I mean, it's the same bike. It was just the next size up that should have fit me. And it just didn't have the same soul. And also, bikes have gotten better. But Yeah, that bike was really cool. And kind of like Kenny's, you know, Kenny didn't get a lot into the build on his bike, neither did Andrea, but like that was the first bike that I had Industry 9 wheels on. That was the first bike that I rode XTR 1x on. That was the first bike that I had working mechanical or like good. No, I guess the Titus had good brakes, but like I really came into like owning nicer parts with that bike as well. So I don't know. It was really cool. And yeah, I don't know. It was a good bike. And I hope that that thing's still being ridden around campus somewhere, because I sold that to a kid like ultra cheap. And I hope he uses it.
I guess I'm going to come back to me for a second. We'll detail a little bit of the build. So that Jet 9 alloy had Hope Race M4 brakes. Nobody ran four piston brakes on an XC bike. So that was really cool. And they were good brakes until they weren't. And I had those Race Gold wheels that they accidentally sent me instead of Crest. Yes. And they were great wheels until they weren't. But that was kind of cool. What else is on that? It was XTR 1x. It had like an XO carbon crank with that like special 1x ring before, you know, had that homebrew components 1x ring or
oh,
something
God,
like that.
Oh, God, the guy that just had people's money.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Yeah. And what else is on that thing? It was just a nice build.
Didn't you run a Syntace High Flex seat post on it?
Well, I ran a Thompson Masterpiece until it broke, and then I put a Syntace High Flex on it, and it was dope.
Yeah.
It was just a nice bike with nice stuff.
Yeah, that road bike, the brand was a Cisco.
Yeah, I do remember that.
CYSCO?
I think yeah. So. What happened to that? Yeah. How long did you have it? I feel like you didn't have it very long.
Well, I sold it once I moved to Colorado because really, like, it was made to handle really fucking well at, like, crit speeds. Yeah, like, women's amateur crits. You know, you go, like, somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, 18 to 28 miles an hour. And it was really, really good at those speeds. But then I moved to Colorado and it was rim brake, which isn't a huge deal, except like in Colorado, you climb up mountains, you know, like on mountain roads, and then you descend at like 40 miles an hour. And it was really fucking scary at that speed.
It was a flatland bike.
Yeah, yeah. It was a crit bike. It was like purpose built for that, because I told them, I was like, I want the same stack and reach as this BH, because that was my deal, was like, I really liked the fit of the BH. It was like an endurance fit. It was a little higher stack, a little shorter reach. I was like, I want that, but I want a race bike with an endurance fit.
I remember that bike had so much toe overlap. It didn't just hit my toe when I turned the wheel.
Yeah,
it hit my heel.
Yeah, it had a ton of toe overlap, but that's not, like on a road bike, that's not relevant. Like, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, if you turn that sharp, you've already, like, smashed into the curb and went headlong into the ditch.
Yeah, so, like, the toe overlap was not, like, that just wasn't a thing. It's like standover on fucking mountain bikes or any bike. Like, standover doesn't fucking matter. You don't, like, crash a bike and stand over your bike or stop and, like, not just lean the bike over a little bit because you're doing a controlled stop. I don't know. Like, it wasn't something that I cared about. So, yeah, like, they made that. And it was all, like, it was SRAM Red 2x10.
Gen 2 2x10.
Yeah, Gen 2 SRAM Red 2x10 rim brakes. I think it had I9 road wheels that were carbon.
Yep.
Yeah, so it was fucking sweet. It was a really sweet bike. It just was not compatible with mountain riding in Colorado. So, I sold it while I lived in Denver, so like 2016 or something. I don't even remember where I sold it.
The Pros Club.
Oh.
I drove it over to Cherry Creek. JP wasn't around, and Val paid me a lot of money for that frame fork and like brake set or something.
Yeah, maybe handlebars or I don't know.
It was wild. No, you moved all your parts onto a Boone rim frame.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That one that was like green on one side, white on the other.
Yeah, that was a good bike. I don't remember much about it, but it was a good bike. Yeah, but yeah, so I wonder who has that bike. If you're listening out there and you have a Cisco road bike with like a full foot of foot overlap.
It only clears the 25 in the rear and it has an integrated seat mast.
Yeah. God, that bike was cool. All right. We can move on now. I'm happy we've talked about our favorite bikes.
All right.
And I've been thinking about the Devin Larratt thing ever since like the last video we watched with him. I was like, man, I did some shit talking in road races, and maybe not the best thing because people thought, like, the other women thought I was like that all the time. I'm like, well, no, I'm not. But, you know, if you're going to believe me when I tell you, like, I don't know, that I'm going to do something violent on the bike, then that's your problem.
I think one of the best things that I ever saw bike racing as a spectator was during a crit, there's a preem lap with like eight to go or some shit. I'm making that part up. And this lady sprints for the preem.
Oh, is that? That was the Tiger Lane thing, right? Yep.
And I'm not going to name any names, but this lady sprints for a preem and her partner is standing beside me. And he's like, oh, God, why'd she do that? And then sure enough, you
I just used it as it was a lead out. Like, no. That's what preems are. It's like it's a sprint lead out.
And you come around the next, like, you can't see half the course because it goes, like, through the, you're
office
like,
office park or something.
Well, you're on, like, the parking lot for the football stadium. And then you go, like, sort of behind the bleachers. Like, you're between the bleachers but inside the grounds for a little bit. And then you pop back out in the parking lot. And pop back out in the parking lot. And Andrea's just, like, fucking 400 yards up on everybody. It's like, Jesus Christ. So
I love crits. They were fun.
Yeah.
They were just a bike chess match is what they are.
Yep.
You want to talk about new shit? There's not a ton of new shit. So,
well, let's run through it real quick. I don't know how strong Zip's line is on this, but according to Bike Rumor, their newest, lightest wheel set is not for gravel use.
All right.
It says that the new, 353. And then,
I just want to say they use the NSW. I don't know what it stands for in Zip and SRAM world, but everywhere on the internet, NSW means not safe for work.
NSFW.
Whatever. But that's what I think of every time I see Zip NSW. I think it's Zip not safe for work.
Are you Googling it too, Kenny?
Nope. I'm Googling other things.
Nest Speed Weaponry.
Whatever.
That's what it stands for? Mm-hmm. That's the stupidest shit I've ever heard of.
It signifies their top-of-the-line, high-performance, and technologically advanced product line, developing advanced research, and they're called the Nest. Oh, it's called the Nest. It was made in the Nest. Wow. Right. Anyways, so, yeah, they're 1,300-gram road wheels, and apparently you can't ride them on gravel. So.
And they have an integrated tire whiz.
Yeah, the Tire Whiz is aero now.
Which I think that's cool, but like, I don't know. I don't really see the point in knowing your tire pressure on a road bike with a tire, like in real time. It seems like that would be a better thing for a mountain bike. Maybe they're going to release a mountain bike version sometime soon. That would be cool.
No, I think where this really makes the most sense is World Tour. Because you can set up like head unit alerts for all this stuff. So let's say I'm just going to throw out numbers. Someone rides 70 PSI. You could set up an alert at 60 PSI and you know you're flat before, like it tells you you're flat before you know you're flat. So you get wheels faster.
Yeah, I can see that.
But because they have to sell what the pros ride, we just all get it. I mean, I'm not saying there's no application for the regular cyclist because I think it would be really sick. Because you could use any pump, anywhere, anytime.
Oh, yeah. I've always loved that about Tire Whiz.
But outside of that, I think it's for the people that need to know as soon as possible.
Especially on a fat bike, Tire Whiz is like the only way to go.
Yeah. So there's that. And then they have a couple more wheels, but they're all road bike wheels. Kona has an aluminum Ouroboro now, which is kind of neat, but I don't know.
A 30-pound gravel bike.
Yeah. Oh, and it's press fit bottom bracket in aluminum. Golly.
Why? Ugh. One extra step. Just put threads there.
Well, it's probably for the tire clearance. I have a feeling that they needed to have a wider shell.
Make it T47.
That costs like an extra dollar.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. I don't get a picture of it, but I'm looking at how they've got like a chainstay plate made. I bet it's for that. But whatever. It exists now if you want it. So there
it's
you go.
It's got warts all over it.
Dude, so many warts. I counted on a Surly we put together this week, not including bolts in the racks, front and rear, but just places to bolt a water bottle bolt into the frame. There was like 32, which is way more than most people need.
Weight savings. Take that little bit of steel out of the frame.
No, they put more steel in the frame to put the threads in. So, let's pay our wolf tooth tax and immediately shit on it. Wolf tooth announces new made in the USA bottom brackets. And, well.
Did they come in dub?
They come in dub.
All right. That's all that matters.
But they're $130. And I know that Wolf Tooth makes really nice stuff, and I know that they make their really nice stuff here in the USA, and I know that they're going to sell every piece, part, and stuff under their right for repair. You can also buy three SRAM dub bottom brackets at $40 a piece and just not...
I saw my first worn-out dub bottom bracket ever. Like, it was last week or the week before. It's literally the first one I've ever laid hands on that I'm like, wow, the bearings are a little crunchy inside.
Did you give it a Viking funeral? Did you put it in a little handmade paper boat and float it down some body of water and light it on fire?
I should have. That would have been really interesting to float it through like the scout wave in Salida on fire. But no, I just threw it in the trash and put a new one in.
I think
the first one that I've ever touched that was worn out.
It's rare. They last a long time. I think what I'm going to do is go buy a bunch of dub bottom brackets and then go like acid dip them or something and anno them all gold and sell them for $200.
All right.
Or have you heard of Krylon?
Yeah, I thought about spray painting them, but you know.
Look.
It's going to be premium.
Do you remember the I'll push on your fork for a Smirnoff? New thing. Hold on. Hear me out, Kenny. For a Costco-sized bag of goldfish, Kenny will arrive on location and use Krylon and no masking tape and paint your bottom bracket.
I will do it.
Oh my God, that's like some stuff.
I'll hold two cans, one in each hand, and I'm going to spray paint your bottom bracket gold for $100.
Nope, large bag of goldfish.
For a bag of goldfish, sorry. Yeah, I'll do that too.
But it has to be a Costco-sized bag.
And you do have to pay. You have to pay for my airfare.
It's art. I mean, I thought it was like Beetlejuice. I thought if you were just like... Full face Kenny, that you just like showed up like,
oh God, he's in the kitchen.
Jesus Christ, that actually scared me. I said that about a customer recently. I was like, don't mention their name. They're like Beetlejuice. They'll just show up. Last new thing that I want to talk about. Department of Labor recognizes bicycle repair technician apprenticeable.
Apprenticeable is not a word, but I know what they're saying.
That's definitely a word in the headline. On
it is able to be apprenticed.
That is 110% not a word.
So, it really, at the end of the day, like I don't want to just shit on. Yeah, even Google like doesn't bring up something. Oh, it does. An occupation approved for apprenticeship by the U.S. Department of Labor Office and a. Oh God.
Nope, not real.
Yeah.
Not a real word.
Yeah, so essentially, apprenticeable occupations are learned through a program of on-the-job supervised training, yada, yada. Developing industry standards for training would also help stops establish a salary structure based on keeping training up to date and performance. So I think what really needs to happen is, I think there's a lot that can go into this, and I'm actually going to email the dude, Mike Schiapolia, and give him my 2 cents. So, because... I don't necessarily think this is a bad thing, but I'm very fearful that this just becomes Barnett's 2.0.
So, I mean, you know, an apprenticeship is really that would be like the opposite. Hopefully it isn't in this situation, but that would be the opposite of Barnett's 2.0, because that's kind of a well-known thing with mechanics that have been around for a long time. Like the Barnett School, you work on a lot of new stuff and you learn how to work on new stuff and set new stuff up, but you don't learn how to like fix the really fucked up old stuff. So an apprenticeship would hopefully give you the field experience of working on stuff that's kind of hammered versus just learning how to bleed a brand new brake, because those are straightforward and they're always the same steps, and it's not always like that out in the real world.
You could probably legitimately have like a 2-year course on just bicycle stuff, because you'd have a class on just bottom brackets. It would be bananas. And then like someone would raise their hand and be like, what about rotor stuff? And they were like, fuck. And then you have to go learn that.
What about IS brake adapters?
How do you size an ISIS bottom bracket?
How do you fix an 8-speed front derailleur with a pair of parallel pliers.
Why does Shimano still make E-type bottom brackets?
God, do they?
Yeah, well, they're all E-type compatible.
Yeah, they all have those spacers, right? Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
So, that'd be a question on the final exam. Why do all Shimano bottom brackets have a spacer on the drive side?
Yeah, well, there's not an answer, though.
At least one.
Good stuff.
All right, Matt, you were... Now Matt's shopping Amazon. He's got a tie-dyed tank top in his cart right now.
Hell yeah, I do. Because...
Tank Top Tuesday?
Because Tank Top Tuesday, baby.
That's a thing at the shop. It's Tank Top Tuesdays.
Any other new stuff? Or do we have any listener questions?
Well, there was one new thing that
already shit on it.
Hunt is doing a new proven carbon enduro mountain bike wheel, claimed to be the strongest available. And we talked about this before. They did in-house strength testing and found that they had the highest strength to weight ratio. No surprise. And yeah, I mean, it's just built with their little carbon in carbon rim bed, and they said it's sub 2000 grams. I'm looking for a actual weight to see if it's like 1990 or something. They have their own hubs that are trying to be a DT Swiss hub.
9-degree engagement.
That would be all right.
They want to stop pedal kickback. No, that's 40 points of engagement.
I'm still looking for a weight. 1,956 grams claimed weight for a 29er wheel set. So, I mean, for an enduro wheel set, yeah, there's definitely some lighter stuff out there, but, you know, if these are as strong as they say they are, then cool, I guess.
They're $1,500.
Yeah.
You could get a whole wheel set and some tires and probably, like, a pair of gloves from Specialized.
Yeah, but remember their last thing where they said there was a big company that they couldn't say who it was that their wheels broke, like, really easily?
Yeah, I don't care. I just don't see people smashing rims every other day like they used to. I mean, I saw a totally munted reserve wheel, and yeah, a guy was in way more words, he was like, yeah, my wheel broke instead of me crashing. Like, he did something really wrong, and he broke his wheel. And, like, there was a time that I once tacoed a wheel instead of crashing. But, like, I could have crashed, and I just, like, barely didn't, and my wheel gave up, but it was aluminum. And it was like a WTB rim, so I don't, from like 2007, I don't think those count.
All right, let's go to, so we have a listener question from Sam. He says, howdy, this is Sam from Vapor Trail last year. My single speed has been collecting dust since the race, so I bought a Husky FE350S. This is my first bike after renting for occasional rides. The bike is stock now, and I'd appreciate recommendations for Matt and Kenny on must-have upgrades like handguards, etc. What you got?
Yeah, I got all kinds of stuff. I'd be interested to know what year yours is. A couple things. They recalled the brakes on those because they both rip off the motorcycle, so that's a problem. You might want to go get that checked out. I haven't gotten mine checked out yet because I'm lazy, and I also don't want to shop to touch my shit, so I need to call them and see if they'll, like, just hand me calipers over the counter, but they probably won't. So, yeah, look into the brake recall and tell me what year your bike is, assuming that it's a 24 or a 25. I've got a 24. My recommendations are the fueling on it is definitely not amazing. You can get an aftermarket ECU. I decided not to do that, but they're, like, $1,000. It's one big reason I didn't do it. But it supposedly really wakes the bike up. The positive of the factory tune is I get 60 to 80 miles to the gallon, which is pretty awesome if you're doing, like, longer distance stuff. I personally got rid of the seat. It was garbage and got a slightly lower seat, but more so one that's a tiny bit wider, and it makes a world of difference. It is a Seat Concepts, and I got, like, the mid-sized one, if I remember right. But it's an amazing seat. It's a lot of dollars, but unbelievably just transforms the bike, at least for me. Just having that, like, half inch less seat height at my height, I'm like 5'10-ish. And yeah, it just makes it way more approachable for sure. But the comfort thing is huge. I got a Recluse clutch on mine, whatever the Mac Daddy one is. And that is definitely the biggest change, in my opinion, on that bike. It's just unreal. They're so freaking good. It just makes riding that bike so, so much more enjoyable. And you can just lug that thing up anything you want, and it'll just tractor all day long, which is amazing. I put a left-hand rear brake on mine because I'm a mountain biker, and that's amazing. And that mixed with the Recluse clutch, you can just like drag the rear brake all the way down the steepest ass shit in the world, fully locked up. Motor's just idling along, never kills the bike, and you can modulate the brake all you want. It's friggin' amazing. And yeah, definitely get hand guards. I got Fastway, and they thread directly into the bar. They give you like a giant tap, and so there's nothing janky, and there's like a factory top clamp thing that goes on, so it's like all super sturdy and super factory looking. So that's everything I did to my bike, and I highly recommend all those things.
All right.
Matt?
I would say tugger straps.
Yeah, I think that those could be really good. I'm not good enough to have those things because I usually don't go up shit that steep, but Matt definitely does. So
here's where I would say it'd be super handy too.
Oh, on that note, that's one thing I noticed. There's these little handhold thingies in the Huskies, but they're half inch deep. So I challenge you to stick your fingers a half inch underneath the seat and lift a 260-pound motorcycle using your fingertips. It's the stupidest ass shit in the world. I don't know what they were thinking. So I got like a proper aluminum handle that is on the right side of the bike, and it bolts in like kind of through the exhaust essentially, and it just sticks out of the plastic. And it doesn't, not that noticeable, but man, you can just like fully grip that thing, and I can just like, I could full 360 that bike, pivot it on the front wheel, no problem.
The place that I find them to be really helpful is when trying to think of how to put this.
You dump your bike off the side of the trail and you need someone to help you get it out.
I don't care how gnarly the terrain you do or don't ride is. If you go off of not gnarly terrain, you know, like there could be a totally chill single track and you just like start dreaming about puppies. Fuck,
like a grouse runs out in front, like explodes off the ground in front of you and you're a little startled, and then all of a sudden you lose a wheel off the side of the trail.
Yeah, and then your bike is just, you know, it's only, you know, the tires might only be like 3 feet off the trail in terms of like over, but the tires might, you know, be 3 feet lower than the trail. So like your bike is like leaned on the bench, you know, the side of the bench.
Like your handlebars, like
your handlebars is touching the trail, and you got to lift that bitch up. Like, I don't know. There was one place that I dropped my bike and I didn't have a tugger strap on the rear. And I just, yeah, there's just not a lot to grab onto. So
I think it's very good advice. They're pretty cheap and they're pretty low profile. So good idea.
Yeah.
All right. We want to go. Our other two are people's memorable bikes.
Excellent.
We want to do those now.
Let's do it.
All right. Let me look at how long we've been recording. Yeah, we got plenty of time. So we got one for Jake. I'm going to let Matt read it so my voice doesn't die.
Probably too late for a favorite bike submission, but here goes.
It's never too late for Jake.
Not too late, clearly.
Favorite is harder to find. If you define it as the first bike I'd save if my house lit on fire, it would be my E-Dub. If it's the one I have the best memories on, it's probably my Visago Jabberwocky, which is currently a frame hanging in my garage. This is the bike I've owned the longest and done the widest variety of rides on. It was my first 29er, and for a bike from 2008 or so, it was long. It made for a stable ride, which is especially good for a rigid single speed. Right now, though, it's my DV8 Claymore. I just feel so at home on that bike. It's slack, but not too slack. The seated position is nice and upright, which is good for climbing on long travel bikes. Every time I ride it, I finish with a smile. My least favorite bike, it's a tie between the YT Capra and every Yeti I've ever ridden. I'm trying to scroll down. That was it. Jake.
Excellent.
All right.
I like those submissions. What's our next one?
This is from
Mike Jones. No.
This is a long...
Oh, my God.
This is definitely one for Matt to read. This is from James.
My most memorable bike was the Giant Trans Advanced Pro. It ticked all the boxes for me. Full carbon, Fox suspension, 130, 115, but allegedly the frame performed well beyond the spec. It had SRAM GX, 1x shifting, and carbon wheels with Maxxis tires.
That one had a good suspension design, didn't it? Wasn't it kind of a...
The Maestro link.
It had like, yeah, that little link that kind of went over the bottom bracket, right? But it was a solid rear triangle.
I don't remember.
I remember those being pretty good bikes, for real. But continue.
Let's see. Of course, I had read all the reviews and watched countless first ride impressions videos about all the marketing hype. I really wanted that bike. A couple years earlier, I convinced my wife and myself that buying a Surly Wednesday fat bike was all that I would ever need besides Marbella road bike. And it was true. The Surly was fun in the winter. It did a decent job on single track. especially after I found a set of 29 plus wheels on Craigslist for $400. The hubs alone were worth that. But the old N plus one rule reared its ugly head after a couple seasons, and I convinced my wife once again that having a full suspension mountain bike was essential. When the Trance finally showed up at my bike shop, I told them to make sure and save the box for me. Within a few weeks of taking delivery, I shipped the bike to myself in Sun Valley, Idaho. This trip was a brainchild of my friend Peter, who organized the trip celebrating turning 50. What a beautiful place, and what a fantasy come true for me. A trip specifically designed to ride mountain bikes in actual mountains. I suppose I should mention I live in Minnesota. I love Minnesota, and we have lots of great single track trails in my area, but no mountains. It was a wonderful trip. Upon returning back to Minnesota, I took every opportunity to ride single track. It was on a beautiful Sunday that I went out, or in July, that I went out on one of my favorite trail systems called Monarchs with my son, Luke. We were going to meet up with my son-in-law, Eli, to introduce Eli to some trails. But Luke and I got there early and get a rowdy ride in first. And let's see. I was feeling in top form. I stopped at the top of a sign, posted a couple of drops that warned people to be cautious. It was asked if you should try it. I dropped over the lip, dropped down, picked up quite a speed at the bottom. There was this little kicker. I hit it at full speed, but didn't shift my weight back. So my rear wheel hit the kicker. It pogo sticked my back wheel up and sent me over the bars, landing head first, breaking my neck in the process.
Oh, fuck.
The ambulance came. I spent several months in hospital and rehab facilities. The spinal cord injury I sustained left me able to only walk by hanging onto a walker. It affected my hands, so I can no longer do things like play guitar. I can't ride a bike anymore, so I ride a recumbent ice trike with e-assist. Anyways, all this is meant to explain my Patreon name, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy.
Jesus.
So wow. His favorite bike
is the one that almost killed him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be it.
Jeez. Well, that's, thanks for sharing that. That is, that's quite the story. I hope you continue to recover and get better and maybe one day, yeah, are back to as close to 100% as possible.
Yeah. That was a wild ride.
But I think those were good bikes. I rode a few, had a customers with a few. They were kind of, that was in the era that I had the RKT. And that's when like those carbon short travel, full suspension bikes were getting really dialed in and they were getting a little bit slacker. Definitely not a ton. They were still definitely race machines, but there were a decent number of good ones to choose from. Santa Cruz, I think, had an option. That Giant was good. The revised RDO, whatever the Niner was good. I think even the Epics were getting like pretty acceptable at that point.
Well, they had become 29.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everything was definitely 29 for the most part at that time. I'm thinking this is like kind of the 2015 to 2018 era is what's in my brain. Maybe into like 2019.
Like when Boost started being a thing and OneBuy was starting to pick up.
For sure.
Yeah. Boost and OneBuy really, I'd say especially OneBuy really changed what engineers could do to mountain bike frames. Because you just didn't have to fuck with that front derailleur. Like making it be able to work in, you know, all the positions that the bike could be sagged in. Like I think that was really like that made bikes a lot better.
All right. Is it patron time?
It is patron time. So if you join our Patreon at $10 a month or more, if you join our Patreon at all at any paid tier, Patreon does allow you to sign up for free now, which as we all know, I'm not great at doing social media of any sort. So I don't post a lot on Patreon. And even if I do post, it's not at the free tier. Sorry about that. But if you sign up for at least 1 cent per month or more, then you can join our Slack channel, talk with other patrons. If you sign up for $10 a month or more, then we'll read your whatever unhinged name on air. So at $10 a month, we've got Zozo, Tom P. Ornstar, Tom's P, Timothy, Ty, Tennessee Zach, Taylor Zwift, Taper Bore Pro, Skunk in Your Trap, Samuel, Ryan, Rock Bitch Jake, Ride Time Extended,
Pork Chop Sandwiches,
Noah, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Leland, Josh, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, JC, Jared, Jake D, Holden, Two Dicks, Green Giant, Gordon, Fuck Bike Rumors, Shitty Website, Frank the Tank, Fiber Paste Chamois Cream, Eric, Dwayne Elizondo, Mountain Dew, Herbert Comancho, Chunk Norris, Captain Thickle, Cam Irish One, Bill, Bearded Bag O' Dicks, Barrel O' Dicks, Angry JRA Forever, AJ, Aaron, underscore, at $11.11 per month, we've got Single Speed Racing, where average becomes a lifestyle choice, Patamelon Disco at $14 Australian, Dean at $16.50 Australian, and at $20 a month, we've got Scott, Poop Wrench, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Brian, Savannah at $26.06 per month, Harley at $30, Troy at $31, and Six Pack Outdoors, we kudos our own rides at $50. You guys are making me think tonight. It's tough. All right, we got anything else?
Nope. Shut it down.
All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.
There's some shit coming out of your brake pads.